Hej med jer, alle lyttere, og velkommen til denne uges udgave af Musik på 24/7. Et program, hvor vi hylder musikken. Både de aktuelle, nye, ældre og undergrunden i både dansk og internationalt musik. Mit navn det er Stine Omega, og jeg er jeres vært den næste times tid, når jeg tager jer lyttere med ud i musikkens magiske og fantastiske verden. Velkommen til Musik på 24/7.
Onsdag den 1. november ligger sangskriver og musiker J.J. Levine forbi Spillested Stengade i København. Denne gang der er han ude solo og har ikke sit fantastiske band med, men jeg er så heldig at have J.J. med her i studiet, hvis borgerlig navn er Evan Patterson. Hi Evan.
Hello.
Hello. Did you understand a single word of what I just said?
I did not.
No.
just J.J. and Evan Patterson. That's all I understood.
Patterson, that sounds a bit Scandinavian. Do you have any like Scandinavian legacy?
I do not.
Oh, you don't?
No, but I might be part Scandinavian. I'm tall. I'm very tall.
Yeah.
6'4".
Do you have blue eyes?
No. Green eyes.
Green eyes, yeah. Well, you know they traveled.
Yeah, I believe it's German-Irish.
Okay.
Is what I am.
Yeah.
I believe.
I remember when I first got to know your music, I thought that there might be some Scandinavian because of the...
of the sound.
Yeah, and I was like, well, then maybe we're close, even closer.
Possibly.
But welcome to Denmark.
Thank you.
You arrived yesterday?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
How is it?
Basically, I went to my hotel and then I walked across the lakes and went to a bar all night and saw a friend, and that was lovely.
Amazing.
A friend I hadn't seen in 4 years, since 2019, since I was in Europe last.
Yeah. Okay, so you do have some connections to Denmark.
I do.
Yeah.
Now,
who is your friend?
His name is Liam Andrews, and he played bass and sang in the band My Disco, and he also is now playing bass in the band called Big Brave.
Yeah. Great band.
Yeah, great bands.
Love Big Brave. Mm-hmm. And he lives in Denmark. I didn't even know that.
He does. He's lived here for, I think, almost 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah, you're going to give me some connections back after that, after this. Yeah. I think I'm going to talk to him as well. I love Big Brave.
He would love to talk to you.
Yeah. Ah, amazing. Good with networking. So, Evan, you played last time here in Loppen in 2019.
Correct.
Yeah. And you had just released your album, No Trail and Other Unholy Paths. And you were here with your band. And now you're here solo.
Yes.
How does that feel? Have you tried that before?
I've only played a couple, you know, just a handful of shows solo, and most of them were in my hometown. And then I did 3 or 4 here with Emma Ruth Rundle in 2000. I think that was 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
But that was, I didn't really take it very seriously. I was kind of like, oh, I'll just figure out what to play, when I get there. And then I showed up and I was like, I really should have rehearsed more for these shows and made it more of an experience. And for this tour, I'd had plenty of notification and time to rehearse and make this something very special. I mean, I dearly miss my bandmates, but you can only do so much without them. But it's going to be a different show. It's, you know, it's electric guitar.
Yeah.
I'm using 3 amplifiers, and I have some loops I'm going to create live, and it'll be, an equal experience for people who have not seen us.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because when I saw you in Loppen in 2019, you have this sound which is so big, and when you're playing together, you really have an magic and outstanding vibe, you and the guys in the band. Mm-hmm. Not lots of band have that, in my opinion, and you just seemed so connected to each other, like you were being like one unit when you were playing, like being one. The listeners cannot see my hands right now, but I'm making a ball with my hands.
We are very much a unit. I mean, the 3 members of the band are dear friends. It's not like a band that I've found these guys that are the best musicians in town, you know. They're friends. They're just without them, you know, the vibe would be completely different. You know, there's a ways that they play that I write these songs for their style of playing instruments.
Okay.
So it's really created a part of our sound, you know, the minimalism and that whole thing of like having no drum fills and having like, you know, less complicated, less, you know, progressive rock kind of sound. So them not being here is, you know, not the most exciting thing for me. You know, I do wish they could have came over with me, but the opportunity to do this tour on my own, I couldn't really pass it up. So
no, and you will learn a new thing.
Yeah,
right?
By the end of there's 24 shows in 25 days, and by the end of that, I'll be really good at playing solo.
Then you will just go home to the guys and say, you know what, I can just do this.
Exactly.
Just give me a loop pedal, and then I'll work it out.
Next record, I don't need you. I'm sorry.
But you do. Can you take me back to when did it all start? When did JJL start? When did you meet these guys?
Well, it's funny because they weren't in the band originally. Originally, the whole project started as I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, visiting a partner at the time, and she had a broken parlor guitar, acoustic guitar, sitting around the house, and I restrung the guitar and got it working and playing, and then I was like, I'm going to write a song a day just to have like something creative going on in my life. And I wrote these songs, and I wrote the song Pull Me Back to Hell, which is, you know, like the song that I was like, okay, I guess I'm starting a new band. And I recorded all the songs with different people, different musicians. And then I kept on doing, like, I would do improvisational kind of shows where I'd play the songs, but I'd ask random musicians if they'd just come play day of.
Okay.
I'd be like, come, the songs are really simple. Just play whatever you want. It's going to be great. And they'd show up and be like, this is so much fun. And then next thing you know, I ended up getting all my best friends in the band. And it's just like, okay, now we're going to go on tour. We're going to make another record. We're, you know, all these things started happening. And I never really expected for this musical concept to turn into anything more than
fun.
Random, like fun, you know? I mean, I recorded the first 8 songs and I released them as like 45, 7 inches only. And then, you know, then the next thing you know, it's like, well, now you're going to make an album. And I'm like, okay, I have to write a whole album. I need a band.
Yeah. You know?
So it's gone, you know, beyond what I could ever have imagined from the beginning to now. And I'd been doing, you know, another band for a very long time called Young Widows.
Yeah.
And that band had kind of stopped touring. The other members had kids, like multiple kids, 3 kids, couldn't travel. And then this started picking up and I started traveling and, you know, came to Europe twice in 2019 and then twice in 2018, I guess.
Yeah, because you used to be the backup band for Emma Rosmando.
Yes. Yeah. And that was, we opened for her 3 times and then came over once on our own.
Yeah.
Which was when we played here last.
Yeah.
It was our own tour.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was there. It was such a great show. There were like no people there. And it was not your fault at all. It was because it was in the Easter holidays, and it's just every venue is just like there are no people there. But the people who were there was really, really, really touched by your music. And I remember you played one of the oldest songs, Hope, Faith, and Country.
Hope, Faith, County.
County, yeah, sorry. Yeah. And I was, you were like taking requests. Yeah. And I said that song and you guys were like, do you know how to play that? I don't know. Let's try it, and then you did it perfectly. I think it was actually one of the greatest shows that I have ever seen.
Well, thank you so much.
Sometimes the small ones are also the most intimate ones, and
I feel the same way.
Yeah,
I don't really want to see. It's odd. I'm not really a fan of being in a room with thousands of people. And my favorite shows throughout my life have been to, you know, honestly, from like 10 people to 150.
Yeah.
And you get to really experience like the personality of the band and connect with the show so much more than at a festival or in a big sold out venue. And, you know, it's something to me, I've never really minded playing to a small crowd.
No.
Because I know how important those shows have been in my life.
Yeah. But now you're also going to go on tour with Dallas Green, City in Color, used to play in Alexis on Fire as well. And he is like a big one now.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, we were playing to 2,000 to 3,000 people a night in the States in these beautiful historic theaters. And honestly, I mean, that was the most fantastic time I've ever had touring in my entire life.
And, yeah.
And he's one of the kindest people I've met in this whole music business world, just overly appreciative and kind. And their entire crew was, you know, it was something I'd, you know, literally had never experienced with anyone. I mean, he's nicer than my closest friends. It was just one of those things.
You're
just
like,
this guy is just the sweetest person. And he's, you know, on top of the music world right now and just doing so well. It's so exciting to know someone with that kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, and his band live was, I mean, absolutely like fabulous. Just, you know, playing the songs that I've listened to. I was kind of curious how it was going to go because he's much more pop than we are, clearly.
Yeah.
And live, it was just such a soulful, magical performance that his band would put on. You know, it was really made our set before them. It kind of had a really nice flow into one another.
Yeah. When I saw you were playing with him, I was like, please come to Denmark.
Well, hopefully we do some more tours with them. They've threatened to take us on tour again. So.
Well, then you should come by Denmark again. So, yeah, let me see. Let me pick up here. Sorry. So, last time you were here, 2019, you made your recent album in 2018. And earlier this year, you came out with a new record.
I did.
2018 to 2023.
Well, I released another record in between that.
Yeah, you did. You actually did lots of things in between that.
I released a record that I made on my phone while I was on tour.
Oh.
It was all created on the GarageBand app on my iPhone.
How did that happen?
It was kind of random. I was making songs. A friend of mine asked me to make a score for her fashion show. So I was making the music on my phone because I was on tour all the time. I really just didn't have any time to do anything else creatively and started doing that and then working with Ben Chisholm from Chelsea Wolfe.
Yeah.
And him and I now, he's like the secret fifth member of the band. And, you know, he worked on the album Prison with me. And it was really a situation I never thought I would be making music on my phone that I even remotely liked and thought was going to be presentable. So I'd make these songs and I was working with him for the score for the fashion show. And I sent him the song and he said, we should just make an album. It's all songs you make on your phone. He's like, this is awesome, you know. And then next thing you know, 3 or 4 months later, I had 12 songs. And, you know, he was touring a lot as well and very busy. So within the next, I had it complete by the end of 2019. And then he finished all his mixing and editing and additional instrumentation. And he didn't use any real instruments either. It was, the whole thing was, there was no real instruments. It was all just digital instruments. And I honestly didn't think I was going to sing on the record. And I had been writing, also like writing poems and lyrics while on tour. And I just printed out, you know, probably 40 different little writings I'd made. And this is all stuff I'm doing on my phone. I'm just, And I took all of those lyrics and poems to the studio and just kind of would try one out and be like, no, not this one. Try one out. No, not this one. Try one out. And then all of a sudden it was like, I just sang on the record by just going through all of these, you know, words that I had written down. It was a really different process.
You just combined the words. Yeah. There was no like bigger meaning behind them.
Yeah. And a lot of those words were about touring.
Mm.
And some of the songs are about like a time I had in Berlin. Some songs are like time I had in Paris. And it was a really fun record to make.
But how do you write your lyrics in general, Evan? Because of course there's always my interpretation of your things, but I sometimes get the feeling that some of your lyrics are really personal and then some of them aren't, or just like, you know, stories, you know. Mm. How do you write? What are you inspired by?
It really depends, you know. A lot of times in my past, most of the songs have been based around my relationships, or they're kind of more based around my mental health and, you know, emotional health and concepts, kind of more about, you know, my inner workings of my own brain and how they work in any kind of codependent relationship, or how to survive, you know.
Yeah.
And then other songs will just be something will just kind of hit of you know, a story to me that I find entertaining, or concepts of words that just sound really great together. Mm. You know, it's, you know, or someone will say something to me of like, you know, the song Cemetery Rain, that song was written because my friend was like, I've just been walking around crying in the cemetery. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, just been so depressed. I just like go walk around and cry in the cemetery. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay. You know, and then I talked to him more about it. And then the concept of walking around crying in a cemetery just sounded like that should be a song.
Yeah.
So I turned it into a song.
Yeah.
But it's all very random. I don't have a particular way that I make music, so. I think that keeps it interesting. I think if it was more of a normal process every time, of everything starts with a guitar part, everything, then the vocals, or I write, you know, the lyrics first, or a vocal melody. It's very when it just hits, you know.
Mm.
I mean, every now and then I make the music, all of the music first, and I arrange all the parts and. Then I'll have to force myself to be like, okay, this song needs words.
Yeah.
Kind of how the Prison record was.
Yeah.
But with the new album, it was honestly songs I've been working on since probably 2017.
Okay.
And it was a lot of guitar-based songs I'd sit around and, you know, I'd just work on them for years of like, okay, I don't like this chord progression, or maybe I'm going to play it in a different key. And you know, I mean, the song The Florist on the record and Snakebite.
Yeah.
Those songs, I mean, we were playing on tour in 2017.
It's funny that you say that, because I can actually hear the vibe in that when, if you also listen to Pull Me Back to Hell, it's sort of like the same vibe in it. I don't know. Did you write the lyrics also back in 17, or did
I
you?
Did.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, that's a song, just an example of, you know, that song is about my cousin overdosed on heroin, or I guess it was on fentanyl, but he was struggling with heroin throughout his life, and he passed in 2020. And I had written the lyrics to the song actually about my other friend's brother that died. And then when my cousin died, I was like, well, this song is actually kind of more about him than it is my other friend. And it just turned into this kind of thing of you know, having an addiction problem and struggling with that, and kind of how to escape that, how to move on and get through that. But it's all very random what the songs are about and how they come about.
Should we listen to it?
Sure.
Now we have talked about it. Let's see if we can make it work here in this little room. All right, let's see.
Boys and teens, you sink them into him. Boys and teens, you sink them into him. My brother, that snake bite, that snake bite. The sun dies.
here we are again. Snake Bite. Such a massive song.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to talk more about your new album. Mm-hmm. Don't Let Your Love Life Get You Down. Even you were married to Emma Roth Rundle.
I was, yes.
And you got divorced. And people who know your band and her band and followed you knew that. Mm-hmm. But what happened?
A lot of times they say you shouldn't be in a relationship with the people you work with.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not just that, but it was, you know, we were on tour a lot. You know, it was nonstop. And friends had actually told me, they're like, it's really difficult to be in a relationship with someone that you're in a band with. And, you know, I think sometimes that works out. And it didn't really work out that well for us. It was really difficult to go through all of the stress of the traveling and all of the, you know, just the dynamics of even working together as artists was difficult. Mm. And, you know, I mean, we had a lot of fun, and at the end of it, it was just, she wasn't happy and I wasn't happy. And I basically said, like, well, I got married to you because I wanted to make you happy.
Yeah.
And whatever that may be that you think is going to make you the happiest, I want to try to get you there. Mm. And it doesn't have to be with me. So we got divorced, and I moved her out to Portland, Oregon, and we've stayed in contact and, you know, still keep in touch and still have a wonderful friendship. And
that's beautiful.
It's something that was so important to me to keep that friendship and to stay connected and be able to share our lives together still.
And you also have done so much music together. And you were backup for her bands. She also sang on your songs. You sang on her songs. You know,
yes,
you have this special bond to each other.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there was the No Trail album. I mean, she played guitar and sang on, I mean, 7 of the 8 songs, I think. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was so much to just kind of throw her in the mix. And we had met on tour years ago, and then when we started working together, when I started playing in her backup band, and it was, you know, such a great connection, you know, and that we still definitely have that connection. I think the harder part is being in the relationship, and being artist was not the difficult part of our relationship. We were both very active, creatively. So, you know, I mean, every now and then she'll be like, would you be in my band again at some point? I'm like, maybe. Yeah,
maybe. Let's see what time sells.
When we get to that bridge, let's see if we can cross it.
Yeah. But the title, Don't Let Your Love Life Get You Down, you know, we have all been in some matter in our lifetime, in some situation where we get our hearts broken now and then. When I found your music and Emma's music, I actually found you both like on the same day. And I was like in the most worst part of my life, struggling with my relationship at that time. And I was so depressed and I was so sad, and your music just helped me so much. So I know that there is like this bridge you have to cross where you are depressed and you feel really bad, but I also know that you can come across that bridge and be sort of okay again. How did you do that? Like, I mean, Don't Let Your Love Life Get You Down. That's such an honest, like, title.
I mean, it was kind of a decision of just, you know, instead of, I'd actually been divorced before.
Yeah.
And it really tore me apart, and it took me a long time to, you know, it took me honestly getting married again to conquer kind of the fear of abandonment.
Okay.
And then when it was coming around again, it was like, okay, I'm going to get divorced again. And I had no other option than to make the best out of it instead of wallowing and feeling bad for myself. Mm. You know, I couldn't do it.
One more time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it was, honestly, looking back, when I was feeling depressed and I was feeling the ways from the first divorce, it was a waste of time.
Yeah.
And energy. And this was, you know, I was like, I have to come out of this ahead and feel good and not get knocked off my tracks of where I'm, what I'm doing with my life and where I'm going. And it worked. You know, I also did, I don't talk about this very often, but I ate mushrooms for 8 months straight. And every day I ate a little bit of mushrooms, the psychedelic ones.
Yeah.
And it was a thing of when the mushrooms would kick in a little bit and I would start to have like that anxiety, I would just kind of conquer that anxiety every time it happened and be like, okay, I'm going to be fine, you know, no matter where, what situation I was in. And I wasn't, it was microdosing, but I think it was a little more than microdosing. So after 8 months, it kind of, I was just feeling clearly really great.
Yeah.
And I'd like conquered so much anxiety, like dealing with all things in my life that used to shut me down and break me down and kind of make me just be like, I'm not going to deal with that, or I'm not going to talk to that person, I'm not going to pay this bill, you know, whatever it might be. And it really helped me with keeping my communication with Emma really, you know, connected. It helped me with staying creatively more focused and up. And at the end of the 8 month period, I was like, okay, I think I might have cured myself.
That's amazing.
I just didn't, you know, I used to have a lot of depression, you know?
Yeah.
Just into a vortex of confusion and delusion and emotions. And since then, I have not once felt like how I used to feel. So
when you were struggling with depression back then, did you eat lots of medication?
I never took medication.
So you did the shrooms instead?
Yes.
Yeah. I will always vouch for the shrooms.
And and it wasn't a party experience for me. It was about
working yourself.
It was about kind of reconnecting and, you know, passing up those depressive anxiety emotions and kind of moving forward and not, you know, being stuck in those holes.
But Evan, not everybody can do that. I think you need to be some kind of like a reflected person. You have to look inside yourself to use that as a tool and make it work.
I think it helped because I was recreationally taking a lot of mushrooms before then. So there was many times I was just, you know, going for the full psychedelic experience and had been doing that for a decade or so. So I knew what to expect at the peak of the drug and how to control it myself.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, I didn't want to have those experiences. I wanted to have something else. And I knew it was in there, in that drug. And it worked.
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
Okay. The song, The Party of Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, also because I'm from another country, you can get those misheard lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think we're going to listen to the song in just a bit, but I have to tell you something that I actually got a bit embarrassed about because I misheard your lyrics and I don't know why, but it has.
I've done that plenty of times. Yeah.
So when you are singing something about nothing to waste or something, I thought that you were singing eating mushroom waste. And then I was like, but that doesn't make sense. So I had to look up your lyrics, but I felt that shroom thing.
Yeah, I was probably on mushrooms when I was singing that.
I, for so long, eating mushroom waste, that was what I thought you were singing.
I would never, I don't think I would ever actually sing about mushrooms in a song.
No.
So, yeah.
But you said, ain't much to waste. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I wanted to be shrooms.
That's great.
But let's, maybe we should hear Party of Redemption because I have some questions for you for that song. Should we roll it?
Yes.
Let's do it. The Party of Redemption. Yeah. Eating mushroom waste was not what you said.
It is not what I said.
But one of the things that you said, you are like introducing the listener to some figures in this song. And can you tell me who they are? Who is the Trash Man?
So the Trash Man, these were just kind of, I was lining up like a way of being like, okay, who are these people that are very important? And it's like the Trash Man, imagining like a life without a trash man.
Yeah.
And how much trash we would have, how our houses would be full of trash and our yards, and we'd just be living on all of our trash.
Yeah.
So the Trash Man, he's very important. And, you know, all of the things he's taking out, the like, things. I had this image of the Trash Man just kind of taking away a burnt down house or something.
Okay.
Or,
yeah.
You know, or all the things like that a family has lost or that a person has lost, and he's, you know, filling the lands with broken hearts. And then you get introduced to the Spaceman, and the Spaceman is finally figured out that we can take all of our trash in the world and take it to Mars. So we're going to clean the world of trash, and we're going to put it on Mars because that's the only thing we can find used for Mars, which probably will happen one day.
Fuck. We're just going to put it somewhere else. That's fine. Yeah.
And then you get introduced to the caveman, and the caveman is kind of what I was thinking about. Like it's a creative person. The caveman is the one that's kind of like figuring out ways to make life better.
Mm.
And you know, in the line, it's the caveman glyphs. I turned that into a verb, but a caveman's drawing a line between dim and smart, because clearly the caveman had to be very smart at one point.
Yeah.
To learn all of the things that we've learned, and we're
to
all,
evolve.
Yes, yeah. To evolve. And we all, I think, have a bit of the caveman in us still. And then the last one is the captain, and it's just kind of a thing about kind of an anti-war statement about how the captain always thinks that they're the right ones, that they are the ones in charge, and you know, they really shouldn't be. And the song is kind of about being at a party with all of those people there.
Mm.
And how, like, you don't really want to hang out with any of those people, and you just want to leave and go hang out with the person that I'm introducing these people to, or
yeah,
that I'm being introduced to. And it's kind of like, why are we here? Why are we subjecting ourselves to meeting all these people that think they're so important, and all you really want to do is go hang out somewhere else on our own and have a fun time?
Yeah. But these people, you say, could an interpretation be that they're like religious figures?
Not really.
Okay.
Not for me.
No.
Yeah.
Are you religious?
I was raised religious.
Yeah.
And I'm not religious now.
No.
No. I would say I'm atheist, but I wouldn't even say I'm atheist.
No. Okay.
So
yeah.
I'm just not religious.
No. You're just here.
Exactly.
We're just here in between the trash men and the spacemen and the cavemen and the captains. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
So, Black Diamonds and Bad Apples. Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about that song?
It's a song that I wrote towards the end of my marriage with Emma.
Mm.
And it was kind of about how I was having issues at that time with touring so much. And I feel like we were always just like coming and going and never staying put, and couldn't keep my feet on the ground or get my head straight of where I am or who I am. And the song kind of is about getting separated and kind of our relationship changing, and how I didn't want to, you know, I could go through and break down what all of the lyrics mean, but it's about us kind of partying too hard, and then about us kind of not knowing what to do besides party at times.
Mm-hmm.
And then about not connecting and being in different places, and you know, just the depression hitting and all kinds of things in the relationship, and tried to fit it all into this little song and say that it's not going to be that bad if we aren't together. It's going to be okay. If it might be even better for us to not be together, you know? So that was, that's what the song means.
How does it feel to write like such personal lyrics? Can't that be like intimidating for you now and then, or are you just perfectly fine with that?
You know, I mean, it's an outlet.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I didn't get into playing music to make money.
Mm.
So it's a creative outlet, and it's an emotional outlet. And writing about personal things to me is important because people need to hear that other people go through these important things, you know, these personal things, and know they aren't alone. Know that, you know, that other people can go through these situations and survive and grow and become, you know, better people or better minded, and just, you know, stronger emotionally, stronger mentally, and you know, that's kind of why I like to make songs be a little more personal than not personal.
Yeah. So before we are listen to this song, because we are almost out of time here, even. Mm-hmm. Yeah, time flies in good company.
It does.
Yeah. What is the future for you? Now, what you are the tour now, but what will happen after that?
I'm actually going to be a father this coming February. My partner, Christy, she's 6 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Going on 7. And when I get back, I'm going to welcome a baby boy into the world. And I have no tour plans at the moment. But we did record some songs, and we have some songs that we'll probably be releasing in some format. Might not be an album, but it might be some kind of like B-sides or EP collection coming out probably next year. And, you know, beyond that, just wrapping my head around, my heart around being a father.
A new chapter in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Maybe a new chapter in the JGL lives as well.
That's true.
Yeah.
I want to teach him to sing right away.
Yeah. Get that deep voice right there. I'm a father, you know. Nah. Evan Pettersson.
Patterson. Yes.
It was so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you for having me.
And I wish you the best concert, and looking forward to talk to you again and hear about your little baby boy in the future.
Let's do it.
And now we are going to listen to Black Diamonds and Bad Apples.
Let's try.